Coming up on this week's book show, Julia Alvarez is the best-selling author of In the Time of the Butterflies and How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents. Her new novel, Afterlife, is a compact yet deeply felt novel that speaks to grief, our broken society, and the questions of what we owe to each other, ourselves, and our larger community. Julia Alvarez on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Afterlife is the first adult novel in almost 15 years by Julia Alvarez, the best-selling author of In the Time of the Butterflies and How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents. Afterlife is a compact, nimble, and deeply felt novel set in this political moment of tribalism and distrust. It asks, what do we owe those in crisis in our families, including, maybe especially, members of our human family? How do we live in a broken world without losing faith in one another or ourselves? And how do we stay true to those glorious souls we have lost? Alvarez is the author of 6 novels, 3 books of nonfiction, 3 collections of poetry, and 11 books for children and young adults. Again, the new novel is Afterlife, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Julia Alvarez to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to speak to you.
Well, thank you for having me and for keeping us connected during these very difficult times and strange times.
Obviously, this latest chapter is something that is not included, but you write this book, and I mentioned this in the introduction about this set in this political moment. Did you want to write the book because of that, or it just reflects it because that's what you were living through as you were writing it?
Well, you know, I think that if you are a writer who is aware of your time, and how can you not be, you're sort of part of a zeitgeist, and you have a certain level of awareness, or I feel like a writer should have that level. It gets that awareness, that sense of what's going on, gets in the work and is reflected in the work. You don't have to make an effort to put it there. In fact, that kind of strong arming of material always feels like you want the writer to get out of the way. But if you are aware, the things in your life will come through in what you write, even if it's not in any way autobiographical, it will get there, because I think that's part of how a writer works, as kind of a sensibility out there, picking it up.
What brought you to this particular story? Especially, you have been writing, obviously, over the last 15 years, but this is your first adult novel in that period of time. What is there a reason for that?
You mean the long period of time?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Well, I feel like, when I heard from the publisher's copy, or read it in the publisher's copy, that it had been 15 years since my last adult novel, I thought, wow, really? But I was writing all along, but I wasn't ready to publish what I was writing, because I was wrestling with the material and I could tell I hadn't gotten it, you know, and I felt like one of the things from being an elder is that you're not in that still, you know, that sort of making your way in the world impatient mode, that you have to get it out, that you have to, you know, sort of move out in the world. And I just felt like the world had a lot of storytellers and so forth. And I wanted only to speak up when I had something to say that I thought was worth it. But I was learning how to say that. And I think part of it, what we talked about before, is that, you know, my life had gone through tremendous changes. I was now one of the elders of the tribe. And I was integrating all that. What did it mean to be an elder as opposed to a younger woman storyteller? What did it mean to be at the stage of my life? What were the stories left in me to tell before I'm gone? And so there was that sense of having to integrate all that living into the writing. And that takes time. You know, you can't speed up that experience and that you know, trial and error way of moving through the writing, at least for me. I'm a slow learner. So I, you know, it took me a while to feel like I had gotten it in the story, in the characters, in the sentences, at the level of structure, all of that, to be ready to let it go.
We meet Antonia Vega. Like you, she is an immigrant to the United States from the Dominican Republic. She is also a retired professor of literature from a college in Vermont, which is where she lives. Unlike you, she is a widow. At what point did that aspect of making her newly widowed, that really gives the story so much, because it relies so heavily on the grief that she feels, that that's something you wanted to tackle?
Well, you know, I was really kind of, this I think in part because of the times we are living, I was feeling that we're living in elegiac times. And we're seeing so many losses. We're seeing environmental losses, the loss of species, ecosystems, the lack of civility, the loss of a communal life, divisiveness, gun violence, draconian immigration laws. I just feel like there was a pile up of losses. And I wanted to take this down to the level of a particular character, and how not just these bigger losses, but, you know, smaller atomic losses in a life. How does one move through a world, a diminished world like that? How do you move through it and not lose faith in yourself, in each other? How do you come out of it as a bigger version of yourself, you know, not a diminished, lesser self? I think of it sometimes as a contemporary Book of Job with a sense of humor. You know, you take away everything that Antonia has, and what will remain? You know, how will she navigate this world? What will she rely on? Where will she come out on the other end? And I didn't know. That's why I had to write the book. But that was part of it, to take those losses down to the individual level, and to lose, you know, your love, your great love, your soulmate seemed to be something that I would have to have my character give up or have that happen to her. So it's not just abstract, you know, it's not just these things you hear on the news. It's not just generic. It's come close, you know. It's her very companion. It's her life. She's also retired. So the life by which she's defined herself and the community's also gone. So it's, you know, it's stripping it away and see what happens, what remains when we're at that ground zero.
I was struck by there's the loss of her husband. There is also the loss, the retirement of her job and not having the students, and the reliance that Antonia had on those students and what she learned from them, and that loss, which it seems like you very much felt.
Oh, yes, very much. I feel like it's such a vibrant community when you're in a classroom. You know, someone gets to be called the teacher, but that's just a title. I feel like teaching is learning all the time, and and your students keep you connected with certainly the sight guys I've talked about, the world out there, their idealism, their hope, their energy, their dreams. I mean, all of that is like constant infusions when you're a teacher. And, you know, when you move away from that, it's a loss. And, you know, in part, people ask me about this title, people, I should say, my publisher was a little worried that people would think this was a religious tract. But I think that, you know, life is made up of many little deaths. And after each of them, if we're lucky, if we're resilient, there is an afterlife after that little death is over. And you go on to another life. But at that point in which you lose that former life, especially if it was full and wonderful and vibrant, you really don't know that you're going to have an afterlife. It feels like death. And that's the point at which we enter Antonia's life, that, you know, that point of loss.
Tell me about the writing of the prologue, which is entitled Broken English, of the way you wrote that and the style.
Well, you know, it seems like when you get the novel that, you know, oh, she started here and she went on there. You know, this was a process, as you know, of many years. And yep. So of putting it, trying this, trying that. And I wanted the reader to enter the novel and for the, not just the content, not just the story, not just to be told that things are falling apart, that things are broken. I wanted the very language and syntax of the writing to reflect that. So it's as if you're getting all these little fragments as she's getting the news of what has happened, all these little pieces. And hopefully in the process of the writing of the novel, these pieces are come together, at least the way things come together anymore or any time in life, they come together to make a temporary whole, or what is it that Frost calls it? A temporary stay against confusion. It's just temporary, but in that moment in which a work of art, a writing, music holds it all in all its fullness and mystery, there's a kind of sense of integration and transcendence, I think, can happen at those moments.
Like you, just quoting Frost, Antonia, of course, like you, a college professor, those quotes come out of her almost constantly, of whether it be from T.S. Eliot or going back even to, of course, Shakespeare. It's fascinating how important they are to her, and I assume to you.
Well, I just thought of the quote, Joe, so I might as well give it correctly.
Please do.
Frost called poetry a momentary stay against confusion. Mm. Only momentary, but it is a stay against confusion. I love that. And yes, you know, no surprise here that, you know, all my reading loves live on in the DNA of my character. So, yes, Antonia has been teaching literature. These are the storytellers, the poets by which she has understood her life and made meaning of it. You know, they're just like her little string in the labyrinth of confusion. But what happens, because this is also something she has to give up, what happens when she finds that life will ask more of her than, you know, these ways in which she's made meaning of her life? The literature, the direction that she's found in the literature that she's taught, that she's loved, that she's written, that it's not going to go all the way. That life demands more than that, and that's part of what I wanted Antonia to also confront and deal with.
Julia Alvarez is the author of the new novel Afterlife. It is published by Algonquin. So not only do you tell the story of Antonia in dealing with the loss of her husband, but also the relationship with her sisters, and you write about that and the sisterhood. And there is a sister, and I don't think I'm giving too much away because it is in the jacket as well, but one sister disappears, and the sisters are dealing with that as well. These are wonderful characters, and so rich and so different too, aren't they?
Right. And you know, it's now, as I said, as an elder, you can look back over your shoulder at the other books you've written, and no surprise, but you know, how the Garcia girls lost their accents, a group of sisters, Latina sisters, in the time of the butterflies, historical sisters who started the underground against the dictatorship and the DR. That I think I've always been interested in groups of women. And I guess, you know, I do also come from a family of sisters. And so how women, as I said, it's a contemporary book of Job, but instead of a venerable patriarch, I have a Latina woman who is a sister. How would women deal with those plagues and terrible moments that are visited upon Job? How would that be different? And you know, how much sisterhood, whether it's through blood or friendship, is one of the ways that we can bear up under what happens. But there too, you know, loss is involved. The minute you put out your little tendrils of love and connection, there's always that possibility. But yes, I was interested in sisters, and always, you know, the different ways in which, even within a family, the sisters integrate what's going on and respond to it. And knock against each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, even in moments of strife in your writing, of that there can be an argument going on, and yet the sisters are at a table and they're holding each other's hand.
Right, right. There's a bond there. And I think it's very powerful. I mean, it's the bond of love, that people you love are going to disappoint you. But the bottom line is that love is a verb, as they say. It's a connection. It keeps having to be exercised, and you move through it. You don't abandon. You know, you might kill each other, but you will accompany each other. And so that bond is there. And I think it's very much, you know, I mean, of course, my character is Latina, and, you know, she has my DNA there as well. You know, there is that sense of connection and a familia and holding together, and the importance of that, which is very much a part of our cultures, where we don't just live a me, we live a we. That's something, too, that my character deals with, that she keeps quoting, as she says, the mantra of the first world: first your oxygen goes on first, and then everybody else's. But what about when you find out that it doesn't work that way? Everybody's got to have their oxygen on, or the plane goes down. And if any moment in our recent history has shown us that, it's we're living it now. You know, it's not just, you know, our country, first world, second world. No, you know, we're all in this together, and we're all needing an oxygen mask, sometimes literally. That's something that I think we have sort of known in our old world cultures, our indigenous cultures. That's how we've survived, and that's important.
In that section, and when you're writing about Antonia, and she's going to Chicago to visit her sister, which she wasn't expecting to do, but one of the things that she's very concerned about is that she doesn't want to become the sister that is referred to as poor Antonia.
Yeah. I think, you know, I've been lauding sisterhood, but, you know, there's to open your eyes wide on relationship and see what it is, and at the same time embrace it. One of the things that happens, everybody has experiences, whether it's sisters or not in a family, is that sometimes the roles get divvied up, and people get into these little boxes of, you know, the kind sister, the patient sister, the, you know, the selfish sister, the whatever, the bossy sister. And we're all bigger than our little containers, but that's part of, you know, continuing to grow in relationship is to keep breaking those containers and be, you know, the diversity that we ask for in a community, to be that diversity in yourself and in families. So that's part of it. She doesn't just want to be a label. She wants to be her full complexity. She wants to be granted that, and she wants to grant other people that. And that's difficult, even to grant it to ourselves, you know, in all our messiness. And so, yeah, she doesn't want to just be assigned a role, and she has to stay in those trenches all her life, or she doesn't grow.
Julia Alvarez is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is Afterlife. In fact, you write, though she hates these sisterhood triangulations, bifurcations, she can't help wanting to know the current Sturm and Drang. They might be one whole person, but not without constant altercations, meltdowns, hurt feelings. It's exhausting. That idea, they might be one whole person.
But it is exhausting. Constant. Well, you know, Call it life, to be in relationship and to be growing in relationship. If it's all set and you each get your script and you stay within script, you know, it can be tidy. It can be very easy. But to continue to grow and to always be committed to, no matter what, that you will be a whole, you will be connected. You know, I mean, Martin Luther King talked about that with the beloved community. You know, it sounds so, airbrushed, but no, he says there's conflict, there's trouble. And you don't get to the other side, you don't cross the river without going through it. You have to go through it. But to also remember that there is that deeper connection that you're not going to give up on. But sometimes it is, you feel like you're going to drown in it. So, yes, they're a whole, but not without divisions and, you know, bifurcations and triangulations. But they come through, so I hope.
She also, Antonia, is looking back on the relationship with her husband. And it's fascinating because her husband often comes off as more progressive, as more liberal, and sometimes even more right.
Yeah. Not as in right wing or anything.
Yes,
but
no,
more,
not as.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, I think some of the things that you talked about getting an assigned role or being given a certain epithet, and you have to live that out, and that's all you get. That's also true in terms of ethnicity, and I wanted to explore that too. That sometimes, you know, because she's Latina, she's friends or community assume that she's the progressive one. She's the one that gets them into all these causes. And it's actually her Anglo white male husband who is more progressive than Antonia, and sort of drags her kicking sometimes, and she thinks of herself as a reluctant activist into, yes, what she agrees with, but she doesn't have that drive and that, you know, that propulsion that he does. Again, interested in exploring, allowing even within things like an ethnic group, the full diversity of who people can be and all the richness that that brings. But she has to deal with those kinds of assumptions and cliches about her, which of course the reader sees, and she's reflecting on how that isn't true, that isn't so.
She's also a bridge to the migrant community in Vermont and is often needed within that community, and obviously that community plays a large role in the novel. And the idea of one of the workers that is next door to her when Antonia is driving one of the worker back to her house, and a police car pulls behind her and she has her neighbor slide down so he can't be seen. There's that bridge that you explore as well.
Well, yeah, because I mean, and this is something that is very much an issue in our, what I used to call our Latino compromised state of Vermont. Now that population has grown exponentially because a lot of the workers on the dairy farms where small farmers have not been able to get local help or undocumented workers from Mexico and Central America. But we don't have, haven't had, it's slowly building the social networks and services, Spanish speaking, to take care of them. And so the people who do know Spanish, either because they're from that culture or because they've studied the language, are called on to be of help. So that's been an experience of many Latinas, Latinos in Vermont, and also of people that have some knowledge of the culture and the language, that you're being called to help. And it's in many cases helping your neighbor, a local farmer that needs something translated so that the guy who's never had a milking machine knows how to use it. Or it's the local school that some little girl that's crying has shown up and she doesn't speak any English and nobody can speak to her. Or it's the hospital. You know, you have a friend who works there and there's someone there, you know, in the emergency room or in need. And could you help with the translation, with the translating? So, you know, it happens. It's often been an issue in our communities in Vermont where there are, as I said, many new arrivals that the whole economy of Vermont, the whole dairy industry is on their shoulders. And they're supposedly the invisible, unappreciated ones. And yet they're the ones that are carrying this industry. And right now, the ones who are feeding us, helping us with their labor that's 24/7 and doesn't stop because there's a virus.
I learned this in your novel that women are preferred to milk the cows because they're more gentle.
Well, you know, in doing the research for this novel, I went and, you know, interviewed farmers and tailed workers and so forth. And I was really taken with several farmers that told me that the cows give more milk when they have female milkers, not just Latinos, Latinas, but female workers. And I thought, well, you know, that kind of makes sense to me. You know, there's a kind of, maybe there's a kind of affect and care, more maternal. I don't know, but this was noted to me from the people who know. I didn't make that one up.
No, certainly makes sense. The name of the novel is Afterlife. It is published by Algonquin. Julia Alvarez, what a great treat to speak with you. And I thank you so much for the beautiful novel. And I thank you for all the gorgeous work over the years.
Joe, thank you. And thank you for connecting readers to our work, connecting me to writers through your show. It's really, you know, in times like this, we really need that because, you know, it suddenly struck me that a phrase that's being tossed about is very much what reading is all about, which is being together apart.
Again, Julia Alvarez's new novel, Afterlife, is published by Algonquin Books. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.